Mardi Gras, you know.
All right. You're listening to WTUL New Orleans. This is your news and views programming. Gahiji here. We're going to try this again. We have Mama Jennifer Turner of Community Book Center on the line to tell us a bit about Mardi Gras Pass, do a little storytelling. We're very excited to have her on. All right. Can you just start telling your story again about what Mardi Gras was like for you growing up in the 50s era here in New Orleans?
Oriented, much as it was yesterday with NAMTAP. It was very family oriented insofar as black people coming together and just having a good time, mostly drinking and eating and eating and drinking. That was the Mardi Gras I can remember. I also remember the Zulus. Zulu started roughly supposed to start at 8 o'clock in the morning and would come down, start at Jackson and Claiborne, and would come down Jackson Avenue, and there were a series of ballrooms along the way. And they would stop at each ballroom and toast, even though they toasted only at the official toasting was Gertrude Geddes. That's closer to Jackson and Liberty than it was down the street. So, but it to me, Mardi Gras was the black Mardi Gras for us in Central City area. So we really and truly, since New Orleans was segregated anyway, the only white people we had on in our neighborhood was Miss Blue, who was the landlord, and she lived in one of her own houses down the street and the corner grocery stores. But the carnival was a very festive time for us. You know, we would, it was like we would go to almost to every parade. There were more parades during my era than today because when Dorothy May Taylor, who was on the city council, when she wanted the Mardi Gras organizations to more or less integrate a lot of the social clubs, I mean, a lot of the Mardi Gras clubs, they decided against it. Basically, you know, our Mardi Gras was right there in that community. I could stand on the porch and watch the Mardi Gras Indians coming down the street. I could, the kids had a little more freedom because everybody watched out for each other kids. You walk down the street, right there on Simon Bolivar was the truck parades, and they would be like over 200 truck parades just sitting there waiting so that they could go down Jackson and to go down the Canal Street. And so really we didn't have any reasoning, you know, my community didn't have any reasoning to go, you know, out that area. And so a lot of black folks would come into our area. And it was a little economic boom for the ballrooms that were located in our area. The dress attire was something that was that we had. Also, we would wear. That was the day you got new clothes, new tennis shoes, new jeans, new shirts. Boy, you were clean. Everybody would virtually have on a pair of Roebuck, and it would be starched. Stiff. Could hardly walk in them. Bring them around there by Ferdinand Cleaners and get them started. And he was on Jackson Avenue. And then you would have, because that was a black business. And so, and a plaid shirt. You put that plaid shirt in a handkerchief, a paisley print handkerchief around your neck, red or blue. And so I don't know how you could tell where everybody was, because virtually every family almost had that on, not unless you had a costume on. But they would be throwing things as you anticipating Zulus coming down the street. Well, they had a series, just as I said, they had a series of ballrooms. So they would stop, get them a drink, go down a little further. So it took a little while before the Zulus would get down there. By the time they got to the toasting area, it would be almost 10 o'clock. And then, so by the time they got up to down there on Claiborne Avenue, where they have the Black Mardi Gras also, they were pretty fly. But we didn't have to, as I said, think back on all of the family and friends and community that was involved there without an incident. I just remember one time, I must have been around seven years old, but it was the first time I ever heard my father, you know, curse. I mean, really curse. I mean, using those MF words. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
There was white policemen that would be on the side of the Zulu. And they would be like in these little go-karts or whatever. And they always brought out the dogs. I don't know why. Brought out these dogs. Dogs, these German shepherds, they were vicious, you know? They were always barking, you know, while a parade is going on. But we, you know, never really paying any attention. And my dad was a quiet man, you know. He didn't talk much. He was, you know, he's just a quiet man. And who loved his family very much. And he loved his wife. It was naturally. So really there, here come the floats. And my mom was standing up and she had her hand raised. And I was watching my dad, because he never did, you know, really go for it. They would hand him his stuff. They would just give it to him. He'd get his coconut before the parade even started, because he knew people. And he was just standing up there, you know, making sure everybody was safe. But I was watching him, and the dog, my mom was just waving, and the dog and the policeman had got kind of close to my mom with the dog, and the dog really could have bit her right in the face. And my dad, in a very, very quiet tone, but very forceful, told him, said, "If that dog bite my wife, you're going to eat that you know what." And that was the first time I had ever heard or seen the expression on his face like that. That was a frightening thing. You believe you me, the policeman just eased on out and took that dog and went on down the street. I never forgot that. And so I think of today, you know, why don't we have that type of family unit anymore, you know? But it was all good time. It's still here, you know, it's the same music that they played back then, they playing right now. Same music. Professor Longhair, you know, it's with the Batiste brothers. I love Oop Mardi Gras. And the people of that stature, but it was really, really nothing but family that rolled that was during that time. And so now that I see Saturday when we went to NumTalk, I see that same family bonding, and we need to get back to that, you know?
Yeah, I really enjoyed Nam Talk. It was my first time going this year. But it, as you were saying about, you know, things being the same, it felt very, after going to Nam Talk on Saturday, really enjoying that, being around, you know, all those beautiful black people, seeing all the black children doing their thing. And then going to Okeanos on Sunday, the circuit.
Which one?
Okeanos. It's one of the Uptown morning
parties. Oh, I don't know that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, there are a lot of new.
Well, the segregation feels very real and still in place.
Oh, yeah. From... Oh, yeah. Most definitely. You know, it was interesting. The little sister from San Diego, she was with us that day, and she said, Mama Jen, what is up with these men with these masks on that look like KKK? I said, because that's what they are. KKK. She said, well, what's up with them with the stick and the look like a burning cross? I said, that's what it is. I don't think people really realize the symbolism that's there. Because they've been so conditioned to them. But people from out, from away, I'm talking about black people, people of color that come in, that know the history of enslavement, that know the history of the Ku Klux Klan and different things of that nature. They see the symbolism there. But the people, black people that live here, and the whites that live here, that were born and raised and raised in that type of culture, they don't see it. They don't see it. They look at you like, you know, when you're telling them about it, and they're looking at you, well, that's just the way things are. No, it don't have to be the way the things are. Aren't you tired of that? That's interesting. So when I tell people, you're in a slave state, and they're looking at me until things like this happen, people from away understand what I'm saying. But people that live here, they don't quite get it. They still in that slave state. It's just like in 12 Years a Slave, you know, in the book, he talks about how the rope was cutting his neck, cutting through. People coming out, hanging up clothes, children playing, just like that's a normal day to see a black man hanging from a tree. You know? So.
Yeah.
The more things change, the more they remain the same. There's a book out by James Gill. It's called Lords of Misrule. You get a pretty good idea of the politics of what is going on. Because they actually believe in that hierarchy, that kingdom, you know. They're king for the day. They like British rule. You know, going through the streets and waving and having on those masks and sworn to secrecy until the day of, and the horses galloping. You know, that's another thing. The horses galloping like they're going, you know, to a Klan rally or whatever. You know, so as I got older, the more I read, the more I understood. Oh, okay, this is what this is about. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All of the frivolity and all of the debutante balls and Comus and Rex meeting at midnight. What is this? What is this madness? You have to see it. Comes on Channel 12 when Comus and they still meet together, even though Comus doesn't parade anymore because they said they refuse to integrate. They refuse. Black people couldn't afford that stuff anyway. All they had to do, they just tired, because look like they got them out the crib anyway when they would bring them, when they get them on their float, half dead looking stuff. They would be the last parade of carnival season. About 3 or 4 people would come and see them anyway, come out.
One thing that I was asking someone about was the difference between costuming. When you're in majority black spaces, there isn't a lot of costuming. But when you're in whiter spaces, there's a lot of costuming. What's your, I at first thought maybe it was because of expendable income and having income to actually buy costumes and stuff like that. But someone else said, no, no, people trying to look sharp. They're not trying to look silly.
Oh, yeah. Didn't I tell you they had the Roebuck jeans on and they were new and they were starch. And they, I mean, you cooked the starch. You had to cook the starch. So you had to get your jeans ahead of time. So you took the jeans, you starched the jeans, or you sent them to the cleaners. The cleaners was better because you could get that razor-thin crease right there in the front. So when you put your jeans on, that's how the old folks say, when you put your jeans on, be careful because you want that crease. And so you stood up all day because you had to be sharp. The shirt, everything, clean, white tennis shoes, had to be white. But we didn't say anything. Yeah, you know, if you stepped on them, they're not like these crazy children today. But yeah, oh yeah, you had to be sharp. The only ones that really wore costumes were the little bitty people. You know, like the babies. They dressed the babies up in clown suits. And as you know, I am not too particular about clowns. But they dressed, you know, you didn't do the baby in it. You know, they dressed the babies up in clown suits or bunny rabbit suits. Or you would be dressed, if you was a little older, like 3 or 4, you would be dressed either like an Indian or a cowboy, a cowgirl. You know, things of that nature. That's the only ones that would dress up in costumes. But no, you were dressed in a nine. Mm-hmm.
Hey, did you hear about the Glambo kind of controversy?
Yeah, they can have that. They can have that. But the only thing that was they didn't pay them anything. But what I mean, they didn't pay them anything. The stipend that they did give them, that was the blacks during that, when I saw it coming up, and they were carrying their own cross with the kerosene, and it would drip. And it would have, like, several, like, little things where, you know, it would light up the side of the, you know, float. And they paid them virtually nothing. But it was a supplement to their income here in New Orleans, because, you know, jobs here, you know, not unless you were passing, you didn't get a job that was that paid a lot of money, black, you know. So if you did, you tried to hold on to it, and the crap you had to take to keep that job or something else. But and then when they going down the street, the only white folks would throw pennies at them. Just to see them, you know, dance and twirl and everything. And so that was a supplement. They figured that was a supplement, too, so they didn't have to pay you that much. And they would get burned because the stuff would drip and the fire would come on. Oh, it was man. That was really disheartening to see these black men, you know, taking care of their families, you know, and have to degrade. I won't say degrade themselves, because they didn't. They were working hard individuals, you know, and that was a hard job. That wasn't an easy job. That was a hard job. So here you have these glambos that come in, you know, in other words, we'll say, well, the glambos wasn't that hard. Well, really? And so now, you know, look, a woman could do it. Okay, well, good, they can have it. Why they didn't do it before? They can have it. They can keep that punk. They're like Mona Lisa. That's the doo-doo of our history. They can have it.
Now, did any black women ever do flambeau? Or was
I don't know. You don't think a black woman would do anything like that. They took care of their family. You don't think they did that. No, in hell, heck no. Black people have so much pride down here, it's a shame. And you just don't know. Pac pockets. They have the little caste system too here. You know, caste and class. You know, so heck no. You boo, no indeed no. You better not say flam, no boo. Gam, no boo. You better say gumbo, but you sure better not say no flambo. Nope. My dad had a best friend. His name was Mr. Dave. Mr. Dave was like over the flambo carriers, right? I can't remember when, but I can't recall, but I know this much. The flambo carriers went on strike. That was the year that they didn't have any lights for the float. That was good. That was that we came out to see, not see that. And they got what they want. Mm-hmm.
What were their demands? What did they want? Why were they on strike?
Weren't getting paid anything. You that's a dangerous job, and you're not getting paid anything. You don't think they had hospitalization?
Did conditions change also, or just did they get higher?
No,
pay?
They just got a little. They got paid. I think they got some other things. I can't quite recall all what they had asked for, but it was they got virtually what they wanted when they found out that, you know, they were serious about that, you know, not parading. And they didn't. So the following year, they let them go the whole year without, without, you know, any flambo carrier. Because this is an economic boom for the city. You know, this is when they make money. The hotels make money. The food industry make money. The entertainers make money, be it street entertainers or entertainers that's in different ballrooms or different places like that. You'll notice I never talked about French Quarter. Well, I'm not. I don't know what they did down there in the French Quarter. We weren't allowed down there in the French Quarter. Both ways. The white folks didn't want us there, and our parents still wouldn't let us go down there. So, yep, I'm not. I don't know. And the first time, you know, when so-called, you know, integration came on, we went down there. I couldn't take it. Too much for me, you know.
All right, we'll hear a little bit more about that. Let me just, we're at the half hour. It's about 8:33, 4 or so. So let me just read a couple announcements, and then we'll come back and continue talking with Mama Jennifer Turner of Community Book Center. This public service announcement is brought to you by the Internal Revenue Service and WTUL New Orleans. Free tax return preparation assistance is available for eligible military members and their spouses. Volunteers at military VITA sites are trained to address military-specific tax issues, such as combat zone tax benefits and the earned income tax credit guidelines. More information is available in IRS Publication 3, the Armed Forces Tax Guide, available on the IRS website, irs.gov, or by phone, 800-TAX-FORM, that's 800-829-3676. What does the fox say? Vulpes, spins new releases and progressive vibes, Monday nights at 10. More information, including WTUL's on-air schedule and calendar of events, can be found at WTULNewOrleans.com. All right, we're going to continue with Mama Jennifer Turner of Community Book Center telling us about Mardi Gras past and present. One question I have about Mardi Gras past for you is, what were the throws like for you as a child? What were they throwing at you? And were they actually throwing coconuts at people back then?
Oh, yeah, he was throwing coconuts. Look, I just got this in. It's a bulletin. And my husband was listening to me talking about it. After the strike, the float builders started wiring floats for life within 2 years. of the Flambeaux's, while the Flambeaux carriers were gone, so they started doing that.
Do you remember what year that was?
You remember what year that was? 60. Was it 60? Had to be. It was before Kennedy assassination, and that was in 63.
Yeah, somewhere around there. I'm bad with dates myself.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. Now, what you was asking me previously?
Oh, about throws and about throwing coconuts.
Yeah, they didn't have that many throws. All they really had was, they had a few bees, you know, but mostly they would throw decorated coconuts. Yeah.
Just Zulu, or were other parades throwing coconuts as well?
I can't recall I don't remember them. The only parade I ever knew, the only black parade they ever had when I was coming up was the Zulu parade.
Oh, so you didn't even participate at all in any white parades or parades?
No, they weren't on Simon Bolivar. We didn't even venture out that area. We stayed right there in that area. It was too dangerous to go out there by the whites. Anything could happen.
Now, was there anybody that kind of broke that rule, and anybody that you knew? And face some of those consequences?
What, black?
Yeah.
They probably went to jail. Wait. I know someone in my family used to go out there to Canal Street. My uncle. Jacko, Uncle Jack? Yeah, he didn't care. He used to go out there. He used to come back. He was tall. You know, he was over 6 feet. I'd never have to worry about throws, because when Uncle Jack went out there, he was tall. So he, you know, when they would be trying to throw to the white people, he would just snatch them out the air. He just did that because, you know, I didn't want that junk. But he just snatched it out the air. But he did that later on. Like, that was in, like, no, that might have been in the 70s, 60s. No, it's still in the 60s, in the late 60s. So, and then by that time, you know, they had switched the route, not the Zulu route. They had switched the route where the truck parade that used to line up on Simon Bolivar. They had switched them out. But as I said, you had enough throws to resell them or whatever you wanted to do. I never did resell mine, but you had enough throws, because they used to throw doubloons, like gold doubloons, and they had the name of the Mardi Gras parade and all this on it, you know. And I forgot, I think that was in the 60s, late 60s or early 70s they would do that. I'm not sure, but
well,
evade me.
Speaking of hustling, though, what kind of little side hustles did people get going on during Mardi Gras? Like, now you see people, you know, selling water and parking.
Yeah, no, food mostly, and they didn't really hustle it, because, you know, mostly liquor, and that was in the ballroom. They never did worry about bottled water. There was no such thing as a bottled water. You better go to that faucet and get you some water. If they had a hose pipe or something like that, drink out that hose pipe. But no. And insofar as I said, it was more of a community thing. You know, people would pass by and say, "That sure smells good. You want some?" Yeah. And they'd give you a plate, you know. Give you a plate or whatever, you know. Plate of beans and rice. That was the staple, beans and rice. And it wasn't even barbecue. Just beans and rice and potato salad. It was cold. a hot dog. That was, you know, quick, you know, where you could take the hot dog and go look at the float right there. But mostly people didn't charge. It was, we hustled more today than we hustled then.
Hmm.
You know, tell you the truth. You know, insofar as that time is concerned, but you hustled, but it didn't go with food, because they, you know, because you know you had a lot of drunk people on that street, and you didn't want to give them too much of hot dogs, because hot dogs don't look good once they come back up.
So now that things aren't, you know, as well, the segregation isn't as enforced. I mean, even though we still see things happen, like what happened last year with the two young black males, teenagers in the French Quarter who got...
That never would have happened during our era, because we never would have allowed, they never allowed the young kids that old, that young, to be out there in the French Quarter, not unless they were hustling, tap dancing or something of that nature. Shining shoes, and you had no reason to shine shoes during Mardi Gras.
But what I was going to ask was about, kind of bring it to the current, because things aren't as segregated. So do you participate more in the integrated events? Or we'll just call them integrated events, even though, like I was saying, it very much was segregated. It's funny going from Nam Tok, seeing, you know, the sea of black people, and then going to Okeanos. And there are some black people in the crowd and stuff, but for the most part, the crowd was, you know, white people all on the floats, even though the floats were things like Chinese New Year, and there was a Cinco de Mayo, and, you know, and so, of course, my question to the people on the float was, is anybody on that float Mexican?
No.
Just wondering. So do you participate in any of the other, what do you do now for Mardi Gras, is basically what I'm asking.
We usually text one another, get on the phone, like we're on the phone right now. And Channel 4 have the Mardi Gras, and 6, they have the Mardi Gras parades on. So generally, I can't stand like I used to. And I don't want to be bothered with them white people when they get drunk. When white people get drunk, they get real silly. They want to be your friend and fall all on you and everything. No, I don't allow that. That's not Mama Jennifer there. Then I become Jennifer. And so, no, I generally don't go, because, you know, they'll put me in jail for knocking the hell out of them, even though they drunk and threw up all on me and wanting to talk and So I generally up there. Last year, you know, your mayor come out and everything. And so, you know, my sister said, look at your mayor. I said, look at your mayor. She said, he's sitting on a white horse. He got black horses and black policemen in a circle around him. He said, I said, yay, your mayor is an Oreo. That was his parade, I guess. He must have been an Oreo on a white horse with all the black horses and black policemen around him. He in the middle. I see. Yes, indeed. And then Rex come out. Rex come before Zulu. Yeah.
So I forgot what I was going to ask. Well, I think actually that's probably a good place to let you go on about your day. And even though it's kind of rainy today, so I don't know, a little chilly, but I'm sure we'll get out there and be plenty of street reveling.
Where you going? You going to see Rex and Zulu meet?
Rex and Zulu meet. Tomorrow I'm going to definitely enjoy Zulu on Claiborne.
Okay, you're going on Claiborne. Okay.
Stay in the Treme around my house.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Usually if I go, I get up like 5 o'clock in the morning, park the car, and sit up on Simon Bolivar and Jackson Avenue.
So what are some books that you would recommend about Mardi Gras? So you said Lords of Misrule. That's one.
That's about your best one. And there's New Orleans Morning. It's a piece of fiction. But she has Julie Smith, I believe her name is. That would be good. That's specifically about New Orleans. It's not really historical. Well, not really, like when you went to hear Dr. White, Michael White, at Xavier University the other day. He talked about Black New Orleans, but before he talked about, not Black, but Black Mardi Gras, before he started with that, he talked about where, that it wasn't exclusively in New Orleans that Mardi Gras is, it's exclusively, it started in Mobile, Alabama. He talked about that. And, virtually, some of us call it, we say Mardi Gras, but some of us call it Carnival Time. You remember Carnival Time, the song? Yeah. All because it's Carnival Time.
Well, they do say that it's the top of the Caribbean, so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Some people still say Carnival Time, stuff like that.
Is there anything happening at the Book Center coming up that you want to plug, give a shout out to?
We're having a book discussion on the 8th of March, Pedagogy of the Oppressed, by Paulo Freire, Pedagogy of the Oppressed. So if you want to stop by, and it's not going to be that long, so be prompt. And come on, and that's what we'll be discussing. And then you got, not off the top of my head, I can't think of everything, but don't drink too much.
I'll try not to. What time is the Pedagogy of the Oppressed?
2 o'clock. 2 o'clock.
Okay, and what's the address of the community books?
2523 Bayou Road.
All right, 2523 Bayou Road Community Book Center. Go and support. This is a
548-7323.
Say it again, because I think I was talking over you.
504-948-7323.
All right, Mama Jennifer Turner, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and stories of Mardi Gras.
All right, have a good one.
You too.
Happy Mardi Gras.
Happy Mardi Gras.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines of the mainstream news. I'm Janine Jackson, here with Peter Hart. This week on Counterspin, glowing U.S. coverage of President Enrique Peña Nieto has some folks buzzing about the Mexican moment. But is privatizing the oil industry